News. I'm David Byrd in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump made a surprise Christmas visit to U.S. troops in Iraq on Wednesday. As AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports, the president was defending his decision to withdraw U.S. forces out of neighboring Syria.
Melania and I are thrilled to be here with the extraordinary men and women of the American Armed Forces.
It was a surprise three-hour visit to a base west of Baghdad, which the president says he wanted to make several weeks ago, but had to cancel because of security concerns. He's defended his controversial decision to withdraw U.S. forces out of neighboring Syria.
We went there for 3 months, and we never left. But now we're doing it right.
And says if the Islamic State group strengthens again,
we can use this as a base if we wanted to do something in Syria.
The president had faced criticism for not visiting troops in harm's way during the holidays. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A partial government shutdown is headed into its sixth day on Thursday with no resolution in sight. President Trump, speaking Wednesday in Iraq, said he was willing to wait as long as it takes in order to get the $5 billion he wants for a border wall with Mexico.
The folks are saying, can we have some drones? Can we have technology? Technology is bells and whistles. You have to have a wall. You have to have protection.
The president, who 2 weeks ago said he would gladly take the mantle of responsibility for shutting down the government, said California Democrat Nancy Pelosi is calling the shots. Pelosi is widely expected to take over as Speaker of the House of Representatives January 3rd. She and Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer have said Trump will not get the money that he is asking for. Meanwhile, nearly 800,000 federal employees remain either furloughed or working without pay until the shutdown ends. For more, log on to our website. This is VOA News. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection has ordered a number of changes when caring for children under the age of 10 in the wake of the death of an 8-year-old Guatemalan boy in U.S. custody. CBP Commissioner Kevin McAleenan told CBS This Morning Wednesday his officers are double-checking the health of all children in their care.
We responded by doing secondary medical checks. That means paramedics who are also Border Patrol agents checking each child in our custody to determine their health status, again, in addition to the original processing.
The move comes after Felipe Gomez Alonso died shortly before midnight on December 24th, hours before the funeral of a 7-year-old girl who also died in Border Patrol custody. DHS officials said they have asked for medical help from the U.S. Coast Guard, the Department of Defense, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, among others. They did not say how many children are currently in CBP's custody. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who underwent surgery to remove tumors from her left lung, was released from the hospital Wednesday. The 85-year-old justice's health is apparently doing well. We get details from AP's Matt Small.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been discharged from the hospital following cancer surgery. A spokeswoman for the Supreme Court says the 85-year-old is now recuperating at home after leaving New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center yesterday. She had surgery Friday to remove a pair of malignant growths in her left lung, and doctors say there's no evidence of any remaining disease. Ginsburg has been treated for cancer two other times last month. She cracked three ribs after falling at the court, but despite her health problems, she's never missed arguments. The court meets again on January 7th. Matt Small, Washington.
After a terrible Christmas Eve sell-off, Wall Street prices rebounded on Wednesday with all three major indices making large gains. AP's Warren Levinson reports.
After a week of relentless declines, stock markets rebounded sharply in light post-holiday trading. The Dow Jones Industrials soared 5%, gaining 1,086 points. The market posted its biggest one-day gain in 9 years. The Standard & Poor's 500, which had sunk to bear market levels, rose 5%. The NASDAQ Composite added almost 6%. Traders paused to consider that maybe the sell-off had been overdone. In the face of a still strong economy and robust Christmas retail sales, they also took comfort from White House reassurances that Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's job is safe. Warren Levinson, New York.
A U.S. trade delegation heads to China the week of January 7th. It will be the first time the two sides will meet face-to-face since U.S. President Donald Trump and China's Xi Jinping agreed to de-escalate a lingering trade war on the sidelines of the G20 meeting in Argentina. For more, visit our website. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, December the 27th. Thank you for joining us this morning. Here are some of the stories we're covering for you. French authorities have dropped an investigation into the plane crash that sparked Rwanda's 1994 genocide. In the DRC, the country's electoral commission announced that some parts of the country will have to wait to cast their votes in the already long-delayed historic election scheduled for 30th of this month. The leader of the Catholic Church called on the government to hold the election as promised.
I mean, the Catholic Church for a decade has been almost the moral voice of the Congolese people.
Pro-democracy activist Kambale Msavuli talks to us about the role of the Catholic Church, the DRC's politics. And in Uganda, the government is fighting climate change with some help from the Global Environment Facility. And the new business report predicts some economic volatility in the year ahead, especially in emerging markets like Africa.
The African countries are really diversifying their trade relationships away from just developed markets, so not just the U.S. and Western Europe, which historically had been their largest trading partners. They're trading more with China.
Courtney Rickert McCaffrey is the manager of thought leadership in strategy and management at the A.T. Kearney Global Business Policy Council. She's also one of the co-authors of the Global Business Policy Council's Year Ahead Predictions 2019 report. Stay tuned. These stories plus more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. French authorities announced that they dropped an investigation into the plane crash that sparked Rwanda's 1994 genocide. French judicial officials cite a lack of sufficient evidence in a probe that was denounced by the Rwandan government. A French judicial judge said that investigating judges decided last week to close the case based on a request from prosecutors. The government of Rwanda had always accused French authorities for using the probe to deflect responsibility from France's suspected role in the genocide. In the DRC, the country's electoral commission announced that some parts of the country will have to wait to cast their votes in an already long-delayed historic election scheduled for 30th of this month. The electoral commission says that those areas that will have to wait are the ones where the deadly Ebola virus outbreak infected hundreds of people. However, some in the opposition quickly called it a ploy to hurt their chances at the polls. In his Christmas Day message, the Archbishop of the DRC, Fridolin Ambongo, called on President Joseph Kabila's government to hold the elections on December 30th, as announced last week. For decades, the Catholic Church has played a critical role in the country's politics, including the mediation of talks and negotiations among the various political parties. For further context on the role of the Congolese Catholic Church, I reached Kambale Msavuli, a pro-democracy activist from the DRC.
I mean, the Catholic Church for a decade has been almost as the moral voice of the Congolese people. I can even give an account early in the early 1990s, 1992, there was a call under the regime of Mobutu for the Congolese people at the time, who were Zaire, to rise up and demand democracy, demand a change of the rule, the way Mobutu ruled the country. In 1992, unfortunately, the state went after the people and killed a few in February. That was February 16, 1992. But after that, we've seen even Archbishop in the Congo leading dialogue, the Conférence Nationale Souveraine, a dialogue framework that was created under the Mobutu regime, to, one, create a transitional government, and two, shine light on many of the human rights abuses that took place, and three, build up the state for a transition without Mobutu. So the church has always played a moral authority in the Congo, even now. But with the church doing that, it's not just from the Catholic Church, from the Vatican. You have to think of the Congo in the context. The Catholic Church is the most organized institution inside of the Congo. They can have a message coming from Kinshasa in the morning, by the afternoon, in some of the most remote areas in the Congo, these villages will have the information.
They've been developing a network for almost 100 years now.
Indeed. And you have to also remember, while these priests may be doing the work of the church and so on, at the end of the day, they are still Congolese. So they cannot sit idly by looking at the violence or the situation in the Congo without speaking up. And we've seen in other countries, especially in Latin America, where priests use liberation theology to mobilize for change in the country. And we're seeing the same also happening in the Congo today. But while the Archbishop made the statements today around the elections, we also have to understand what is actually happening. Why is the church speaking up to make sure that election takes place on December 30th? There is already a very volatile environment in the Congo today where the people are more and more disillusioned around the democratic process in the DRC. The Congolese government has delayed election for now 2 years, and just right before December 23rd, they delayed it again to December 30th. And we're seeing, again, signs that even on December 30th, we may not have elections.
Kambale Msavuli is a pro-democracy activist from the DRC. He's also the spokesperson of the advocacy group Friends of Congo. I reached him here in Washington, D.C. U.S. stock markets fell sharply early this week, with the S&P 500 down more than 2% and the Dow off nearly 3%. Some economists say that investor confidence has already been shaken by President Trump's tariffs on major trading partners like China. This is all happening as we enter 2019, a year in which experts predict that geopolitics will remain a key risk to the global business environment. A newly released report points to the trade war between China and the U.S. The A.T. Kearney Global Business Policy Council's Year Ahead Predictions 2019 report predicts volatility, especially in emerging markets like Africa. But the report also contains some positive news for Africa, predicting more interconnectivity on the continent. Courtney Rickert-McCaffrey is the manager of thought leadership in strategy and management at the A.T. Kearney's Global Business Policy Council. She tells me that this interconnectivity on the African continent could begin to put the region on a more sustainable growth path.
We've seen, in recent years that African countries are really diversifying their trade relationships away from just developed markets, so not just the U.S. And Western Europe, which historically had been their largest trading partners. They're trading more with China and with other emerging markets. So in that sense, because of those relationships that have already been built, that could be sort of a win potentially for China going forward.
So we have to say, Courtney, that this report is not all doom and gloom. There's some positive news in its prediction of some of the developments we should be looking forward to in 2019, including the fact that Africa is going to be more connected. Tell us what is happening on that front.
Yeah, so this is something a lot of our predictions for the coming year are a little bit gloomy, and this was one that was a bit more optimistic. So what we see here is Africa becoming more connected really in four ways, in four areas. Sort of the four T's. So in trade, transport, telecommunications, and then in some important truces that are happening. So in terms of trade, I think, most people know intra-African trade has been historically quite low compared to other intra-regional trade. You know, for instance, in Asia or Europe, Africa has has lagged far behind. So that, we think, is going to start to change. So earlier this year, The African Continental Free Trade Area was signed by 44 countries. We're up to 49 signatories now. And we expect enough countries to ratify that for it to actually start to come into force in 2019. So that could be a game changer in terms of trade between African countries, which would really boost economic prospects.
So, Courtney, let me ask you this. What do you make of, or what does the report make of some of the political changes that we've seen in the Horn of Africa, especially in Ethiopia, which is the fastest growing country in Africa? The new Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, has instituted some remarkable reforms, political and economic reforms in the country. But also, geopolitically, he has relaxed or restarted relationships with his neighbor, Eritrea. What does the report say about some of the changes in the Horn of Africa?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, this is a pretty, obviously a historic peace deal between Ethiopia and Eritrea, ending, two decades of war and opening a border that had been closed for a very long time. And then sort of in conjunction with that, Eritrea and Somalia reestablished diplomatic relations in July as well. And now these three countries have been, working together on these tripartite summits. So I think this is obviously hugely significant for the people who live in those countries and maybe have, family or business interests across borders and, that significantly changes their lives and possibly their livelihoods as well. And then more broadly for the broader continent of Africa, I think just ending that type of hostility and sort of trying to work together to find a path forward in a peaceful way is just a really big sort of confidence boost, I think, in terms of like maybe other conflicts could similarly be solved. And then it also just is a big boost for the for investors and business people who might be looking to invest in Africa. I mean, it's something that we get told by global investors year after year in our Foreign Direct Investment Confidence Index is that security is a big concern when they're deciding where to invest. So the more that these types of truces can be established and the security environment can improve, I think the more external capital could also be attracted to the continent.
Courtney Rickert McCaffrey is the manager of thought leadership in strategy and management at the A.T. Kearney's Global Business Policy Council. She's also one of the co-authors of the report. Experts say that Nigeria's economy is showing some signs of recovery, but they forecast that a full recovery is a long road ahead. Since the fall in the oil price, the devaluation of the naira, and the austerity measures that were introduced by the government to boost the economy, there are growing concerns on the effectiveness of all these strategies implemented by the Nigerian government and the impact on the lives of its citizens. Nigerians continue to feel the pinch, especially during these holiday seasons. Samuel Okocha reports on what this means for the consumers and traders in a Lagos market.
This is Yaba Market in Lagos, where shoppers come to buy new and fairly used clothes.
This year, the thing is cost, but we will buy it. We don't have choice.
Although prices have generally gone up, it has not stopped Mrs. Biodun Akerele from doing some Christmas shopping for her family.
I came here to come and buy clothes for my children. I want to make them happy, look them kinky and beautiful, because they are my son, they are my children. So I'm making everything good for myself and my children and my husband.
Christmas in Lagos is associated with holiday shopping. Consumers spend a lot and traders enjoy boom in sales. But this year's Christmas has been an unusual one for traders.
If I used to have like 20 customers in a day, now I can't get even up to 10% of the customers. The economy is really disturbing us.
The Nigerian economy is undergoing a fragile recovery from a 2016 recession caused by weak oil prices. Workers' unions are demanding an increase in wages, and recent data coming from the statistics office show a rise in unemployment rates. This woman, another trader in this market, is worried about sales this Christmas.
Business is very dull. We have never experienced this type of Christmas. this year own is very, very poor. Before, we make sales during December time. Whatever we have, we do sell it. But this year, we are not making any sales. We don't see any customer buying anything. The few people that comes, they price below cost price. They say there is no money.
At the University of Lagos, Professor Ndubuisi Nwokoma is the director of the Center for Economic Policy and Research. He explains how the current state of the Nigerian economy affects consumer spendings this holiday season.
It's very clear. When people are losing jobs, even inflation that was coming down is now trending up. So somebody had a job, he lost his job. And then the little savings he has, price of commodities generally, and services also, are going up. And that clearly suggests to you that spendings actually would be diminished over this period, and that the capacity of the consumer to actually engage in the marketplace is diminished. So that tells you that things are not really going to be as good as people would have desired.
Meanwhile, Mrs. Biodun Akerele has reasons to be thankful this Christmas.
So I just thank God for giving me the money, making me happy, and so that I make my children happy.
Samuel Okocha, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. The government of Uganda has received $7 million from the Global Environment Facility. The money will help tackle environmental challenges. A senior government official says that the funds will be used for replanting of trees, and one environmental activist is on a mission to plant at least 20 million trees in the country as an effort to conserve the environment. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
Merigoriti Chitutu Chimono, Uganda's State Minister for the Environment, says the country has lost about 50% of our forests in the past 20 years. She says most of the trees have been cut by people looking for fuel and timber. Other trees are lost as people clear land for agriculture.
We lost about 1.7 million hectares of natural forests. And because out of 2.5 million hectares in 1990, by 2015, we had only 1.7 million hectares on private land. But on government land, that is the forests that under National Forest Authority and those under Uganda Wildlife Authority and also the districts. So out of 1.5 million hectares, we lost 400,000 hectares.
Unfortunately, Goriti Chitutu says cutting of trees can have dire consequences.
It has affected us through the frequent droughts that affects our agriculture. We are still an agriculture country, so it affects our agriculture production because we used to be a rain-fed agriculture.
She says this mainly affects people with low income levels that cannot afford mechanized farming like irrigation. Minister Goriti Tutu is thankful for the Global Environmental Facility funds received this month and says the funding is timely. She says most of the monies will be spent to restore natural forests in the eastern Uganda's Mount Elgon areas.
There is a tree called Kodia Africana. That tree whose roots can hold soil. Where you have Kodia Africana, the landslide will not occur. And when you cut it, it does not die. It sprouts again. Once you plant it in the coffee and the bananas, they will do very well because it also creates leaves which rot and improve on the soil.
The Global Environmental Facility was established in 1992 to help tackle the world's most pressing environmental challenges. The facility gives grants to developing countries and countries with economies in transition to meet the objectives of the international environmental conventions and the agreements. Environmental activist Joseph Masembe says one way to help curb environmental concerns is to sensitize the whole population about the dangers of cutting trees.
The mission is simple. Can we create a consciousness in the minds of our children and our parents that growing up and taking care of the environment is our own future? It makes a difference. Therefore, if we sow these little seeds of mindset change, seeds of owning up to conservation, then tomorrow we are definitely going to have a greener footprint. We are going to be able to claw back on the so many trees that we have lost as a country and as a nation.
Masembe sensitizes the society, mainly children, to plant trees. Both Masembe and Minister Goretti Chitutu are calling on the government and the international community to allocate more funds to conserve the environment. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Two international charities have launched a program in southern Malawi to help girls in rural areas remain healthy and stay in school. The charities are running girls' clubs in the Mulanje district, a hotspot for the HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. Lamek Masina reports.
These are the voices of some of the 360 girls taking part in Mawa Girls Clubs, which were launched in October in 9 secondary schools across Mulanje district. Statistics show that many girls here drop out from school because of early pregnancies and child marriages. Two charities, Centebale and the Global AIDS Interfaith Alliance, or GAIA, launched the clubs. Luce Muntari is program coordinator for GAIA.
Last year, we had close to 26 secondary school students who dropped out, and 8% of them were girls. Some of them got married, some of them got pregnant.
Malawi has one of the highest rates of child marriage in the world. Half of all girls marry before age 18. The country has also an HIV prevalence rate of near 10%, and females suffer 70% of all new infections in Malawi, according to a report by UNAIDS. Montali says poverty forces many women and girls into transactional and unprotected sex.
Considering that young girls between the ages of 15 to 24, they are at higher risk of acquiring HIV. We support girls with psychosocial support to make sure that they remain in school and they remain healthy.
Under the program, mentors encourage girls to think about their goals in life. Loveness Stima, a student at Namalowe Day Community Secondary School, says she benefits from the program. She says she wants to be a nurse because she loves the type of the uniform nurses wear. But particularly, she would like to be a nurse working in the maternity ward so that she can be helping women. Another student from the same school, Elube Dinesi, says she has realized that when a girl child is educated, she respects the rights of other girls and motivates others. Officials say the work of the clubs supports government programs focusing on girl education. Charity Nkoma is with the Special Needs Section of the Ministry of Education. She says that although government is doing everything possible to promote girls' education, it cannot do everything alone, let alone reach each and every girl child. She says such interventions tremendously help in promoting education for girls. Centebale and GAIA officials say a similar program is bearing fruit in Lesotho and Botswana. They say if funding allows, they will launch the girls' clubs across Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Mulanje, Malawi.
And that's it for this Thursday, December the 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.